You're listening to Valley Edition. I'm Kathleen Schock. California's primary election is over, but the debate over how to address the problems facing the Valley endure. One of the most complex and entrenched of those issues is immigration. To find out more, I spoke with New York Times national immigration reporter Miriam Jordan and Fresno Bee reporter Crescencio Rodriguez Delgado. There is so much happening related to immigration right now. It's dizzying. I mean, even preparing for this conversation, I'm reading through the headlines and there's everything from the sanctuary city's grant fight to the legal back and forth on the stay in Mexico policy for asylum seekers, all happening while there's these continued efforts to halt the use of military funding for border wall construction. It's a lot. And those are just some of the legal battles. There are countless stories on the ground about how people are being impacted. So I'd like to start by having each of you weigh in on what you see as the stories we need to be paying attention to moving forward. Miriam, let's go ahead and start with you.
Wow. Okay. Well, I think that the subject du jour is a coronavirus, actually, in terms of, you know, what's happening in the country and what concerns the country at a, you know, national level. And I'm very curious to see what the intersection will be between this virus and immigration. And by that, I mean that this administration has rolled out a number of policies that intimidate immigrants and might lead them to refrain from seeking medical care if they need it or if they have flu-like symptoms.
Oh, that's a really interesting point. Yeah, Crescencio, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think you mentioned a lot of important issues. And like you said, there's so many issues within the topic of immigration. But I think also, I mean, healthcare, absolutely. I mean, that is one of the most important issues, especially for elderly immigrants who just don't have access. And so I think when you're talking about locally, another issue really is, I think it's income. You have a lot of families who are struggling to get by at the same time having to face these pressures about, am I going to be eligible for benefits? Am I going to be able to provide for my children, who sometimes might be citizens, but these parents are not? And so I think income and healthcare are absolutely two of the most crucial issues for immigrants here in the Valley.
Miriam, you did some extensive reporting on a private prison company's bid to convert two prison facilities in McFarland into federal immigration detention centers. Tell us a little bit about your reporting on that particular issue and what you know about where it stands today.
Right. So the issue here was that GEO, which is a very large and rich private prison operator, had been operating two state prisons in the heart of a farm working community in McFarland, California. And for the years that it had been doing this, it never was a concern, really, for the farm workers, many of whom are here without papers. As we know, the large share, probably the majority of farm workers, are undocumented. Americans do not seem interested in doing work in the fields as they haven't been for many, many years now. So GEO is interested and, well, keen to convert these two prisons into immigrant detention facilities instead. And that's because the California governor had decided, with backing from the legislature, that private operators of prisons should not operate in the state as of January 1st, 2020. And since immigration is a federal issue, GEO and the federal government, and in this case, Immigration and Customs Enforcement specifically, tried to circumvent this decision by converting these two facilities into immigrant detention facilities rather than just facilities holding garden variety California prisoners. So suddenly this community that surrounds these two facilities has become very concerned that they themselves could end up behind bars in that facility. And so the prospect of having immigrant detention centers in the middle of this farm working community led the farm workers themselves to begin organizing and campaigning against it. And they went door to door canvassing, raised awareness of the issue, led a march, and ultimately the backdrop to this, aside from the fact that there were these two facilities that were going to be converted, is that there would be a decision that was quite fatal, one might say, that was going to take place several weeks ago now at the City Planning Commission meeting or hearing. And on that night, the Planning Commission voted in opposition to the conversion into immigration facilities. And now GEO has appealed that decision. So the work of the immigrants in the community was fruitful. The decision was in their favor, but this multi-billion dollar company has decided to appeal and take this to the actual city council itself. So we don't know yet when there will be another vote, but the story is not over.
And I would imagine the story is not contained to McFarland either.
Well, exactly. I mean, across the country, there are immigrant detention centers in areas that have large immigrant communities. In this case, what's somewhat unique is that population of undocumented immigrants that's quite large is just right there. I mean, in other parts of the country, like, for instance, GEO operates a facility in the high desert near Victorville in the town called Adelanto. Well, there's not really much agriculture there, as far as I know. So there wouldn't be as many field workers in the area. I mean, the economy there is very depressed, as it is generally. I mean, these Central Valley towns are very poor. As my colleague just mentioned, you know, the immigrants are poor, but they are working in the fields. They are harvesting the fruits and vegetables that we consume in this country. So the issue of immigrant detention is quite heated. But I would say that most of these facilities seem to be in more isolated locations, not in the middle of a town that is so rich in agriculture and where so many workers themselves live.
You're listening to Valley Edition. We've been hearing from Miriam Jordan, national immigration correspondent for the New York Times. I'd like to shift the conversation back to you, Crescencio Rodriguez-Delgado from the Fresno Bee. Now, when you were still a student studying journalism, you were very outspoken and vocal about your status as a dreamer. Now you are a working journalist at a time when we have a president who is calling journalists enemies of the people. I would just love to hear what you're experiencing given your status.
Absolutely. I mean, this has been a thought that I've had before. When the president started to kind of rail against journalists and calling journalists enemies of the people. But I think I started being comfortable with saying that I was an immigrant and that I was an undocumented immigrant in high school when I couldn't get an internship one time, one summer. I couldn't get an internship, and so I had to explain to my classmates why not. And it was because I didn't have a social security number. And so at that point, I mean, I thought it was very beneficial to my classmates to understand why I couldn't do something that they could, even though I had been told that I'd been qualified. And so since then, really, it was really just about being honest and saying, I can't do this because I'm an immigrant or because I'm undocumented. And so being a journalist is really about telling those stories that for some people might be uncomfortable. And even if there's people who say that you don't belong here, one, because you're a journalist, or one, because you're an immigrant, you really have to continue and just tell those honest stories. Because at the end of the day, you, as the journalist and as the immigrant, are the one experiencing both realities.
And it must impact the way you go about your work as a reporter, your personal experience.
I think it does. I mean, I think in the long run, it's benefited me because and I'm sure that many journalists like myself who come from immigrant backgrounds would also say this as well. I think that it empowers us. It it allows us to kind of look at stories differently. It allows us to look for different kinds of stories, understanding that there are multiple stories that can be told about certain topics from an immigrant perspective, but not just from an immigrant perspective. I think understanding that stories are complex. And so when you're going into some stories that are not necessarily related to immigration, you understand, okay, there might be other angles here. So you start to understand the complexity of things. And so that has really been beneficial.
So I couldn't agree more. There is so much complexity and nuance in any story we tell as journalists. But the immigration story is just particularly complicated. Miriam, I'd love to get your thoughts about just sort of the general nature of how we as the media have talked about immigration and how that influences the public's understanding of this incredibly complicated issue.
Yeah, I mean, I echo what my colleague said to the extent that, you know, what I think, you know, we try to do is to give a voice to people on the ground. And that and in our case, I mean, we're covering immigration. And, you know, I am so committed to getting out there in the field and talking to immigrants and telling their stories like I did when I went to McFarland. And I decided to build a story around one of these undocumented immigrants who had called McFarland home for 20 years and has two American-born children, one a straight-A student, the other this like hard worker who, you know, whenever he has, you know, time is out there helping his parents, you know, make extra money by harvesting grapes or, you know, mowing lawns or whatever. So I think that what's difficult now is that a lot of the public chooses the media that they listen to based on their, you know, preconceived notions about immigration and other topic as well. So it's hard to reach the people who I think need to be enlightened or to see undocumented immigration and immigrants in a more nuanced fashion because, you know, I know that most readers of the New York Times tend to be, one, educated, and two, tend to be more tolerant and open. And so, you know, occasionally I'll get hate mail from someone who has read a story, not necessarily on the New York Times website or has come to the website through Yahoo News or another vehicle and has very strong anti-immigrant views that, you know, I wish I could, you know, I could convince to stay with me and to keep reading stories, because I think that when we tell stories and we personalize an issue, it does change opinions, or it makes people see things in a different light, or it helps them see them in a more nuanced fashion. And so, I mean, that's one of my frustrations as I cover immigration. It's, you know, when you feel, you know, sometimes that you're like just preaching to the choir as opposed to getting people who have very strong views. I mean, people who are concerned about the changing demographics of the country, right? The country is less white. It's, you know, we are now in a majority minority state in California. I mean, those people, I think, you know, if we could only get them to not see this mass of undocumented immigrants, to see them as people, as individuals, as opposed to, you know, this kind of amorphous group that is, they believe, is mooching on this system, you know, that would be helpful to the national conversation and, you know, to people, how people relate to each other in general.
Sure. Crescencia, I see you nodding your head in agreement.
100%. I mean, everything she said is absolutely, it's correct. There is a ton of disconnect, I think, not just in the Valley, but I would be safe to assume in the world when it comes to understanding why people move and why they have to call another place home. Locally, I mean, in the Valley, there is disconnect both among immigrants from information sources, but also among people who are not immigrants who have trouble understanding the immigrant experience, or that their neighbor might be an immigrant and why they're an immigrant. And as my colleague was saying, there are these preconceived notions that you go in a conversation to where you might be thinking that if your neighbor is an immigrant, you are already starting to believe things that might not be true about your neighbor. You know, in some reporting that I've done, I've had the chance to interview immigrants who live in these Central Valley towns, and are simply trying to tell their government, their local government or their state government, we would like clean air, we would like clean water. These are just people trying to survive. And so at the end of the day, whatever your opinion might be about immigration or about undocumented immigrants in this country, I think that we would all be well served by having neighbors who are healthy and by having better information sources. Because I think that another problem with, you know, with this, with the struggles of journalism right now is that we just don't have the reporters that we need to go out there and tell these stories. And you know, we've been getting some great reporting from the Desert Sun with these developments in McFarland and with the GEO Group. You know, that is absolutely crucial information for people who are just not aware of that situation. And so there's a lot of disconnect, and I think it has to do a lot with just the struggles of journalism. And also, we are limiting the sources that people can go to for news. And what's left is very opinionated, very partisan. And that really does not help to bridge these divides. And so I think that it's very detrimental to the advancement, I think, of us as a valley and also as communities.
Final question that I will offer up to both of you. What have you learned? What has been the biggest surprise to you in the work that you've done covering immigration and immigration-related stories? Miriam, we'll start with you.
Well, I don't know if this is so surprising, but it's certainly disappointing that, you know, the last time that we actually had a full-fledged immigration reform bill was when Ronald Reagan was president. You know, all these years later, of course, we have an undocumented population that is larger than when that amnesty occurred. And of course, amnesty is considered, you know, kind of a dirty word nowadays. But what I'm speaking of is just like Congress actually building bridges and being able to, you know, sit down and hammer out some kind of a solution that is to the satisfaction of both sides, Republicans and Democrats. Because, you know, we are now in a full employment economy for all intents and purposes, and we have a shortage of labor. And we're still talking about deporting people left and right, rather than looking for solutions, at least for those who have been here, you know, for perhaps decades, right? Maybe they arrived in 1986 and didn't qualify for that program. But, you know, we have a whole cohort of American-born children of an undocumented immigrant. We have so many, 800,000 documented young adults. And we're still at a standstill, right? And that's just not for the greater good of the country. I mean, it has families in limbo, both psychologically and kind of economically frozen. And, for the good of the country, I think, you know, this issue needs to be addressed. And it just can't be that it's impossible for adults in the room to come to some consensus.
I think in general, what I've learned being a reporter and also being an immigrant, I think, is how to truly, truly tell stories that are honest. Because coming from an immigrant background, one would assume that it's so easy for me to just go and cover an immigration story. But really, no, because I think immigrant stories are all a little different. And so my family story is much different than the family that's down the street. And so I really have to approach their story with an open mind. And that's what I try to do as a reporter. I think that I've learned so many stories over the years as a reporter, when I was a student and also now as a professional journalist with the Bee, where families are eager to tell their stories. You know, that is something that I was surprised, because, you know, you think that you go in and you shy away from asking questions that you think might be personal, but they really want to tell their story. And they're not all the same, you know, in many ways they're not the same. And so that's one thing that I've learned, is that no immigrant story is the same. And so you really have to go out there and just talk to people.
Well, I thank you both for your thoughts today and for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.